Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We are your hosts, Ken Seymour and Richard Geiger, coming together an unlikely team to do the impossible feat of rating a film.
Rating the film, discussing, revealing spoilers, with one asterisk. I feel like we say asterisk, but it's asterisk. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I try to say it as little as possible because I feel silly every time I do it.
Agreed.
Yeah. Obviously, we will be reviewing Thunderbolts, the newest MCU offering. A little bit of wetting of the appetite for things to come. I've been waiting for another MCU film to rate because of my underwhelming response to the previous MCU film.
I think, of course, the problem with that one, it was lost in a mush of nonsense and changes and evolutions and probably bad writing and bad decision making, where this one seems a little bit more, you know, cohesive of a thought process from start to finish.
With the distance, it makes me realize, you know, we did the review of that film, and I realized the one thing that I missed when we were talking about that is, like, Anthony Mackie didn't get the chance to really establish his character as its own character. He got a little bit of flourish for a minute, and yeah, there was that series on Disney, but he didn't get the same kind of buildup that Cap got. And I think that's one of the reasons it failed. You know, the whole idea is escalate from a base, and he's never given that base. So it just kind of didn't feel the same, I feel.
Yeah, you're right. No, he was always supporting.
Yeah.
And then when he got the push, there wasn't the support for the push.
Right.
You know? And then, of course, then the storytelling wasn't great in that one.
Yeah.
It was just a combination of ideas that fell apart. And then, of course, you watched the trailer, you pretty much knew everything that was going to happen. So
exactly.
Any suspense in the storytelling was ruined.
So
I will say Thunderbolts is, I mean, it's, we kind of knew what was going to happen in this movie also.
You kind of did. They did a little bit to try and throw you off just a smidge. But, they gave a lot away in those previews as well. But, as always, we are going to break this down and overanalyze it as we always do, talking about the individual categories of casting, director, costuming and props, location, score, cinematography, plot and writing, and any bonus points that we decided to do. Now, of course, before we go down that rabbit hole, we like to give a little spoiler-free general idea. Is this something that you should spend your hard-earned dollars to see out in the theater? Is it something you should wait for streaming? Something that's okay to be on in the background, or just ignore it completely? Now, for me, I feel it's good enough that I would, if I were a comic book fan, yes, I'd want to see this in the theater, and it's worth seeing in the theater.
And I feel like the movies, this movie pulls from, you know, like three different other movies, and if you kind of enjoy the path that the Marvel movies have been moving along, but are wanting something better than what's been presented to you in a while, this is it. And you say hard-earned money. We're in an AMC town, right?
Yes,
and
we are.
I went on a Tuesday, and my ticket was $6. So look for specials. I think $6 to spend on this movie is that's a great deal.
Yeah, it's a value.
If I had to pay $15, I might not have enjoyed it as much. If I had to pay $20, So maybe that's that's got some, you know, some part of the enjoyment factor as well.
This is going to be our new scale. Instead of a 0 to 100, it's going to have a dollar value.
Yeah. Like, well, what would you be willing to spend to go see this in a theater?
Yeah. Run it exactly like The Price is Right. That whole, They had that one that they did with the Yodeler climbing the mountain, and you'd make, Yodeler, Yodeler, is he going to fall off the edge? Oh, fell off the edge. Bad movie.
Bad movie.
Yes. But, yeah. So, you know, generally, that's not too bad. Now, going forward, in this particular episode, we will be talking about some spoilers. So, if you haven't seen the film, don't want to be spoiled, turn back now while you can. Because we're gonna break into it. All right. Well, let's start with the small totals, which is my favorite way of doing things, because we build the suspense, or at least it feels that way to me. So we're gonna start with our favorite one to talk about, and that's the score. Score can get 10 points. So I've had some people try and compare this to Suicide Squad a couple times, which I don't feel is a fair comparison, really. They're very different films and trying to accomplish different things. And I think this is a clear area where that is definitely the case, because Suicide Squad, at least the last one, not the one before it, is the product of somebody that wants to weave music into the film like he always does. And it's a key component. It's got layers. It's meant to evoke not just a certain feeling, but certain nostalgia and things over certain places. And that's not really what I felt they were trying to do in this film. It was meant as an accent, meant as a joke on occasion, a little genuine in the limo. Mm-hmm. But I feel like what they really wanted to do with the movie, or with the music, is to have it kind of be more to the background, just occasionally pop. And I think they did that well.
Well, that's one of the things about this in terms of the movie and the music that you see up front. And we talk about this a lot. It's the movie that the music in the movies that when you're transitioning from a scene to a scene, and there's not a recorded album song, right, that plays something that you recognize from the 80s, 90s, 2000s. It's that orchestrated song, maybe even the canned music type of stuff that plays. And in speaking of the most recent Captain America movie, that stuff was bad and annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But this stuff was, you know, it accentuated the moods. It moved things along. It was presented how it needed to be presented, and enhanced scenes and didn't detract from them.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's easier said than done, and it's a creative process. But honestly, everything felt fit pretty well.
Yeah. Succeeded. It didn't excite me at any point. Didn't make me go wow at any point. So, but it still did its job and did its job well. For me, that is an 8 out of 10.
And I concur, an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the locations. They had a few. And the ones that they had, for the most part, it felt like they had a couple that they really dug into, and everything else was kind of secondary. And as funny as it was, one of the locations they really dug into was that first time that everybody comes together. I mean, we get a little bit of Yelena doing her shtick and all that, blowing up the one lab. And we got, you know, a little bit of juice from that. We got to see a little bit of detail, a little bit of the city. But it was only meant to be just kind of a passing thing. We got a really good look at that internal bunker room that eventually gets surrounded, and I thought they did a great job with the details and just the feel. It felt really menacing and serious, and I thought that was really cool. The shaft for the elevator was great.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that, you know, some of the stuff that you saw, and you're right, you saw the Malaysia. And the lab on the inside was, you know, lots of glass and tables and counters. And we revisited that later at the end, too. But the Malaysia building and some of the outskirts of the people. Okay, that was fine. You know, that was good. The bunker, which was kind of a highlight, or Capitol Hill, or the courtroom, you know. So you everything was fine.
Yeah.
There was no, like, top secret details hidden up on things, or the rooms they were in weren't expertly crafted with wood accent. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was fine. It was fine, but it wasn't cheap.
No. And I liked the details that they put on the Avengers Tower, having it being redone and all the scaffolding and the bits and the pieces. And they did a good job with that kind of detail, too, I think.
Exactly. You got the cityscape, but when you look at the shape of the building, well, that's Avengers Tower, right? Just doesn't have the big Avengers sign on the outside. And, you know, it was even commented in terms of a joke, some of the interior structure work that was being done in terms of the plaster, the concrete, or those types of things. So those all looked, you know, authentic. But we saw the Lexi's apartment,
which was, eh.
Yeah, just a rundown, you know.
Did what it needed to do.
Did what it needed to do. That had lots of junk laying around in strategic places. And, you know, Bucky's apartment, nice and clean and, you know, well taken care of.
Yeah.
A little bit higher end, of course, because it was, you know, he's in Washington, D.C. now.
I do like that he's still a slob, though.
Yeah. Yes.
That's for later.
Sometimes when you watch a movie, and some of the Bond movies, you're seeing these big grand scapes of mountains or beaches or whatever, and you need that pop. It adds to the luxury. It adds to the ambiance of things. And I don't necessarily think you needed that
No.
for this type of movie. So what was delivered to us was,
it was fine.
More than adequate.
Exactly. I give that also an 8 out of 10. How about you?
I have also an 8.
Amazing. Like minds. All right. So costuming and props. Now, obviously, as a reminder, this includes not only the real costuming, but the CGI overlays, as long as it's part of that costuming and prop things. The interesting thing, I think, about this particular film is these characters are not prop heavy for the most part. I mean, Yelena's got the bracelets, but you don't really see them so much. And, you know, both Walker and Taskmaster have a shield, you know, but that's their big prop. And Red Guardian doesn't really have anything other than just the costume he's wearing. So for the most part, everybody's very minimal. You get the big S belt buckle, which is still pretty funny for multiple reasons. I think it felt like they were kind of, again, underplaying on this, minimalizing, not trying to, you know, skate by, but they didn't need to do a whole lot, so they didn't.
And the thing about these costumes, and we're focusing a lot on those, but even the supporting characters and their military uniforms were, you know, sometimes I feel like you're watching a John Carpenter movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have just like the
so dirty,
cheesiest helmets that they've designated as SWAT helmets.
Right.
But we didn't get any of that, right? Not in this one. There's too big of a budget for that. So even all the supporting characters, they looked good. But right, the focus is going to be on all the main characters. Well, Yelena's outfits.
It's good.
It's good. It's nothing crazy.
No.
The John Walker, that's pretty much what he had on the entire time in the series.
I love the taco shield. That was fun.
Yeah, that was good. Some of the grind. We never did figure out that shield exactly, right?
No, they never really talked about it.
Bucky's arm is the same. It's looked like that since the series and since other things. So that okay, that's good. The ghost character, right? That was a little upscaled from the previous versions that we had seen.
Yeah,
the suit that she used to basically keep herself solid, as she even mentioned, I think was a little updated. I think it looked sharp, without going too crazy on any of the details, right? The Red Guardian one looked old and beat up, just like it did in
Black Widow.
The Black Widow. Yeah. So all of those were great. I never looked at those and felt like, did you try? Or, right. You know,
Sentry
there
looked
was
great.
Too much. Yeah, Sentry was good because it had still the comic book accuracy, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, mostly accurate.
Yeah.
In terms of like the color scheme and the patterns and the designation of like some yellow and whatever.
Yeah.
But it didn't, to me, it looked exactly like what you would think some person who worked for a government agency would put together for a suit,
right.
for this character.
Exactly.
So it fit. And then only thing that I noticed, and it was probably like this for a reason, it was part of one of the running jokes, not the running joke, the joke at the end, is that they had his hair dyed.
Right.
And it looked like it was a hairpiece. Well, and maybe that was on purpose.
I don't think so. I think it just looked like a bad dye job.
And maybe that's what the issue. It looked like it was like you took paste and filled the hair with a thick paste that happened to be, you know, a blonde color.
Right. Exactly.
And once again, that just, I couldn't tell what they were doing. I'm nitpicking, of course.
Right.
But that was really the only thing in terms of like the main characters' costumes and their look that I was like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to interpret on this.
I felt like that was an inside joke because the comic character was very blonde and they got the right actor to play him, but he is not blonde.
No.
And so what are you going to do? You're either going to have some major transformation where he's going to go from not being blonde to he gets his powers and he's very blonde, which doesn't make any sense. Or you have him be dyed blonde the entire time, which would kind of give away what's happening to more people. So they don't want to do that. So this is a way to kind of nod to the comics and the comic fans saying, yeah, we know, blonde hair. But
yeah, it's not going to impact the viability of the character at all. But to play it off as, you know, a marketing thing,
right?
That was good.
Yeah. So I was pretty happy with that. All the military stuff looked great. The limo was really good. I mean, they did a good job. They made sure that all the little accoutrement was what it needed to be, where it needed to be, and it looked right. I mean, nothing, there was not that one thing in my mind that would take it to like a 10. It's like, oh, this was the coolest thing ever. They didn't have that, but everything else was really good.
Yeah. You know, they didn't miss a section of a thing, which sometimes for us, now that we watch them and try to pay attention more to those things, you know, sometimes those missed things, they just stand out. But I didn't see any of that.
I didn't see any of that either. Maybe they gave them enough time to finish this time.
Yeah, that would be it.
So that's a 9 out of 10 for me.
I also had a 9 out of 10 on this one.
What? Okay. So let's go cinematography. Talking about the blocking of the scenes, where the cameras are pointing, how good the CGI is, all that really cool stuff that goes into it. One thing about this film that was going to be important is there are so many characters they're focusing on. They have to be able to have a fast pass on that camera to keep everybody, to give them their time and to make the fights be able to be trackable. And I was concerned that that was going to be a problem, and it just really wasn't. I really liked the way they handled most of the fight scenes.
Yeah, the fight scenes were solid. So where they would do, you know, Yelena versus multiples, for example, and you can only do so much with her or stunt actors and or both. So you've got to disguise, just like they did in all the other Avengers movies. It's not Florence Pugh. She's awesome. It's just sometimes the actions of any of these characters, the John Walker characters, same thing. Like the fighting amongst the many like that becomes an unrealistic kind of presentation.
Right.
So they were good about showing what needed to be shown, showing the athletic ability when it needed to be shown, but not trying to give us some master of martial arts and manipulation sequences also.
Right.
So you know, the one scene when the waves are coming into the bunker and Walker has to take out everybody. All they did was like the and then they come back and everybody's on the ground, right? So they didn't have to show any of it, but it all made sense. Like we knew that was what was going to happen.
Exactly.
So, cool. Great.
I also liked things. I mean, this is more of a writing thing, but in the first scene where Yelena's taking out that one target, she has the writers have her basically thinking what I think a lot of moviegoers are thinking, and this is where the extra does this, and this is where the extra. So she's just predicting what the other, because it's always what happens. It's what happens in every action film. I thought that was pretty funny, and then going through those motions and doing things mostly exactly how you would expect, with that one little twist being different in whatever way, showing the reflection of the guy coming from the other direction, but not making it fill the screen, making it only have this be a small section, so you have to be looking for it. And I thought things like that, those little touches, were really nice.
And in terms of, you know, like the ghost character phasing in, phasing out, that's got to be CGI, right?
Right.
So you can't practical effect that.
Yep.
That stuff looked really solid. Like, solid, believable, not so outlandish. You're like, come on, we need a little polish on this. So, like you said, more time to get that look correct and have it be much more presentable as an A-tier movie would have it be presentable. The Taskmaster fight scenes with John Walker briefly before she gets blasted. Throwing the shields.
Yeah, that was great.
Right? That was good stuff. So those things all looked solid. But in this movie, we saw a bit of Sentry's power.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Void's power is a different sequence and setup. But him, you know, flying for the first time.
That was great.
And yeah, and then crashing down into the mountain.
Because he didn't know what he was doing.
Correct.
I always wanted to imagine that. It's like you get the ability to fly. You don't necessarily know how to fly, and every show kind of handles it different. Invincible does a good job of trying. The cartoon does a good job of kind of going over that in the first episode. But, I mean, the way they handled it I thought was great. It's like, oh, he can finally do it. Oh, yeah, he's scared of heights.
So, but all the cinematography portions with that, where you saw it from the perspective of him discovering that he's so high up and falling back to earth, but then you see it from the perspective of all the people on top of the hill, then you see it from the perspective of them driving away from the scene of the incident, right?
Yeah.
So you got the different aspects or perspectives from what was actually occurring at the time.
Well,
so and they were good at moving through those.
Well, that's a really neat trick too. I'm glad you brought that up. It's a way to not only kind of have some fun with what's happening with the character, but a lot of times in films, it's easy to lose track of where people are in relation to everybody else. And to be able to have something that can pull off multiple things at the same time, not only him learning his powers and having that fun, but now you know where everybody is in relation to everybody else too, because that's where they're seeing him, and you get to get that little bit of information. I thought that was a good touch.
And when the Void character comes out, I liked the little hint of the glowing eyes, which we kind of saw in the trailers anyway, but that still made sense.
Yeah.
I think the only weak part of the CGI actually occurred with a lot of the Void sequences from a standpoint of the city being taken over.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
There was a couple things that I'm watching where I found a thing that wasn't polished. There was the Void shadow was moving, and there was a bus driving across the front, and it looked like the weakest CGI thing that they had the entire time. And I was like, because you're focused on the greater whole of everything being taken over, but I was focused on the bus, the people moving, you know, like the right things you're not supposed to be focused on.
Right.
I was like, okay, we found one. Nitpicking, of course.
Yeah.
But those were all good. The sequences where they were in the Void, transitioning from, you know, room to room. I thought that stuff looked pretty good.
I thought about putting that under location because it is kind of technically locations, but I didn't feel I needed to mention it because they were all neat, but none of them were like really neat. It's like, oh, I'm in an attic. Oh, I'm in the red room again. you're just like, eh. So it's just like, all right. But yeah, so I thought the cinematography did well. Was it perfect? No. It was still dark in a lot of places, which always leads it to be a little harder to follow things. And it had to be, I mean, because it was at night when they were doing some of the things. But that made it harder for me to follow certain things. That's really the only downside that I had. I would have maybe, there are some other small things I would change, but nothing major.
No, and I think one thing too is the whole movie had a filter of some, like a color tone to it that was just, you know,
a wash,
a wash, a gray, maybe even a,
is it sepia?
Sepia, sure. Like, you know, here's normal, and then it was just like a tone below normal in terms of brightness and a yellow, gray, orange, but like very, very minimal.
A little muted.
But a little muted, but enough that it was during pretty much the entire sequence of the movie.
All right. Well, what would you give that out of a 15?
I have a solid 13.
Close to what mine is, about 12 out of 13. We're still kind of the same mind here.
Well, pretty consistent.
Let's talk about...
We'll get to
where we're different. Let's talk about the director for a minute. Now, the director on this is Jake Schreier. I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce his last name. There's a lot of vowels all right next to each other. Now, you might know him from his previous work, but you probably don't. It's another of those choices where it's very clear that the MCU just wanted somebody, they wanted to give somebody a chance to be excellent, but also somebody they knew that they could bully if they needed to.
Yeah. If you look at one of the credits that's on there, it's got Skeleton Crew on it.
Yeah.
And Skeleton Crew is a Disney product. It's a Star Wars thing. So yeah, they already kind of had a little bit of exposure, or maybe, you know, is this one of those movies that was finished 2 years ago, but they just took forever for it to come out?
Probably.
And then Skeleton Crew would have come out then after that in terms of filming, but released it. You know, it's one of those things. I don't know, but I have watched the Skeleton Crew show, and it's very lighthearted. Good for kids, adults, Star Wars fans.
He only did one episode.
Correct. So a lot of the lightheartedness I felt like translated to this movie as well. There was a lot of serious tones, a lot of character development from a Yelena standpoint, for sure. And there were serious parts. There was a lot of silly parts, a lot of levity throughout the course of a movie that always seemed like it was serious, but wasn't over top with the levity, right? Like right. It was always well positioned and well played.
So, I mean, thinking about it, the fact that I didn't really know him from anything is a good thing. That means I have a blank slate going in, but also means I'm not really excited going into the film from a director's standpoint. Now, as far as, you know, what we talked about, the director kind of being in charge of making sure that the story stays on pace, and we put the editing in here, and we talk about making sure that the actors have the chemistry that they need for the scenes that they're going to be in, I think... In terms of editing, there were a couple of scenes that I felt went on a little long for what they needed to be. I mean, I don't know if we needed quite as long as we got for Yelena not knowing her place in the world. But, you know, it was okay, I guess. The section between, basically any of the sections that had to do with the Senate or the party that they were at felt kind of unnecessary. I mean, I get what they're trying to go with because of maintaining continuity. You've got Winter Soldier that's now in Congress, and you know, you're seeing his side of it, but this is not the place to try and explore that. You need more time to do that correctly. A party and one voting session, that's just not going to do it. I felt that they could have kind of done something else. There's a little bit of fat is what I'm saying.
And you mentioned the rapport of the cast and the crew and try to get what you can get the most out of them. And it seemed like everybody got along really well.
Seemed like right? It. And all the interviews like, I'm seeing, they seem to show that they've got that kind of connection.
Yeah, so I didn't get any of that. I also didn't get any of them kind of not realizing what they were making.
Hmm.
Right? You know, the director telling them, giving them the direction for the vibe and the feel of the movie as well. So from that standpoint... He delivered on those things. If you look at some of the other stuff that he had done before he got into the movies, I feel like there was a... Maybe this is a theme for Marvel in some sort, but there's a lot of
music videos.
Right. So they've had success in the past pulling bodies from the director seat of music productions, videos, and things like that. So... This is definitely on par for the course because you have more control as Marvel. You can spend less on the director as Marvel. But of course, if this movie becomes successful, that just means more for this director going forward. And I think if there are more movies, they'll probably have this director come back because
probably
he had a good first major showing.
I expected nothing and got something pretty decent.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, you know, out of 15, what would you give this guy?
Probably underscored it, but I have 11.
Yeah, I got him on 11 too. He did what he needed to do. Didn't amaze me at any point, but solid showing. All right, we're still basically in the same spot. Well, let's talk about that cast a little bit. One of the actors that was in here that I was really happy to see, but didn't really get to see him do anything, was Wendell Pierce.
Well, that's who I was thinking of too. He's got that same type of attitude and character through so many of the things that he does, and you know, one of the things that I've seen him in. Recently, I guess I kind of gave up on the series. was the Jack Ryan series on Amazon. I got like a season and a half through that. But, you know, with that, he played a really good character throughout the sequence of the episodes that I saw. Good rapport with everybody. But it's that same type of, like, character that he played in this.
Right.
Just, you know, a slightly different avenue, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's kind of, I've seen him in so many different things over the years. He had a fun character in Suits. But yeah, he's been in just tons and tons and tons of stuff. And I always like seeing him. And I always wish when I see him as in a kind of a tiny role in a movie, it's like, man, let this guy do something, kind of anything, because he's shown he can do it. It's just, it would be like hiring Arnold Schwarzenegger to just do a walk-by at the beginning of your film or something. Looking at you, Rock. I mean, just, you know.
and you're right. I feel like maybe to an extent, the ensemble cast that was given to us for this movie were ultimately the stars, got so much of the screen time that there were only a handful of other faces that got screen time.
Right.
So you're really focusing on a main core with just one or two others. And then it's all just minor seconds on screen, minutes on screen of just like non-major time at all. So right. Really, this was a movie for six people.
Pretty much. And one of those people was Lewis Pullman, bringing him in. I don't know about you, but I've enjoyed his dad's work for a long time. And just looking at him, his face, it's hard not to see his dad. But he's been in a bunch of films himself and has done really well. I mean, he was in Bad Times at the El Royale, one of my highest rated films that we've done in a review. And he was great in that. I mean, he didn't have maybe as big a part as some other things, but I like this guy. He's what do you call it, an up and comer?
He was in the Top Gun Maverick movie from a couple years ago.
Right.
So that made $1 billion in the box office. I thought his. I don't know this Sentry character. We've talked about it a bit before we watched the movie, so I could get a little bit more information. But it at least to me, his portrayal of Bob, which is what we got most of his screen time with, was very good.
Oh, yeah. It was really good.
Very good.
I'm going to be talking a good chunk about that once we get to the plot.
And him as Sentry is, you know, honestly, some of that's a good portion of that's just CGI, and then the Void is CGI. So his Bob was the main role that I think we would be focusing on, and he did really well on that. We've done reviews for like almost all the Marvel things, and the ghost character from Ant-Man 2, the Hannah John Kamen acting quality in that one, I thought was poor.
Right.
I remember doing the review about it. I felt like she struggled with a lot of things and her presentation was not great. But you know what? In this movie, great.
Yeah.
Really good.
I think she maybe had some more time to sit with the character. I think the fact that she was working with everybody else that have been in their characters for as long as they have. Because, I mean, when she started in that film with the character before, yeah, it was the second Ant-Man film, so several of them had done it once before. But if you don't have that same sort of frame of reference it may be harder to get your footing. And maybe that was what it was. Whatever it was, yeah, I agree. She did way better this time. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is always good. She's just a gem, no matter what.
Very good. And she's only gotten, you know, I let's say I grew up with her, right? Mm-hmm. Seinfeld was my favorite show. It's one of still my favorite shows of all time. And all she's ever done since then is be in more things and win Emmys.
Right.
Right. So the fact that they got her to do the show on Disney Plus and then be now in the movies going forward, I think is a steal. I think David Harbour is a steal.
Right.
The cast in this to me is just, it's killer. It's very good.
And even the small bits, Geraldine Viswanathan was really, she didn't have a lot of chances to show what she had, but when she got her screen time, she made the most out of it, and she was adorable.
She fit the character persona of what that presentation needed in here.
So right.
She was great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just, all the character, all the actors they got, you know, obviously, but they're mostly legacy. The new ones did well. The old ones did well. I would have liked, I would have maybe liked a little more balance. Is what I figured. That's maybe, I was trying to figure out, well, what bothered me about this casting? Because as we just said, they're all really good, but I didn't get that really good feel. It didn't give me the gut feeling that, oh, this is an amazing cast. What is missing? And it just feels like it's the wrong grouping. And they even kind of say it in the film. It's like, all we do is hit things and shoot things. Well, that's also kind of in the portrayal of the characters and what they have to do. There's not as much balance to have the brighter characters to bring things up a notch, or some of the funnier characters often. And even Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's always great, she's like wit and humor personified, and they toned her down in this film. So whether that's personal choice or writing, I don't know. I feel that's the one thing that was missing for me.
Well, it was you removed the humor and you put the snark in.
Yeah.
And I think that was the character that they wanted, you know, underhanded.
Sure.
Right. So you're right. Maybe that's what we've always known her as,
sure,
is her sharp wit and humor. But that's not what this character is. And it just shows you how good of an actress she is.
Oh, yeah.
In presenting all of these different facets of things. When you see her, and she's always got a smile on her face, but it's the snarky smile, right? Like,
sure,
you don't know underhandedly what is happening. So that presentation to me was
it's not so much good. That it's the choosing, it's the casting of the whole thing. So this whole thing was supposed to be a misfit set of Avengers, right? That they're coming from all these strange places. They got to choose what characters and the actors that go along with them to put into them. Why not Ant-Man? Ant-Man would have fit into this perfectly and would have brought a brighter feeling to everything. But he wasn't it.
Well, that's because there are no Avengers, right? Actually, we don't know what Ant-Man is up to.
He was an Avenger in quotes, kind of, but he was never really an Avenger.
Yeah, and what the last time we saw him, he was fighting Kang.
Yeah.
And he was with his daughter, and they, you know, he'd save the day and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, he works better with a group. When you put him with the actual Avengers in like Infinity War and that character went from good to great. And I feel that's what they needed to do. They needed to kind of have a slightly different grouping of characters for this Thunderbolt team, which would have brought different actors in, and I think I would have liked it better.
Yeah, that, and that's occurred. That's part of the plot point that we will be building on here too. But overall, what they got from the people that they had
was really good.
The people they chose were very good. Yes.
Out of 20, what would you say they gave?
Honestly, I gave this the full score. I gave it a 20.
That's very impressive. I gave this a 15.
Yep.
Like I said, it's like taking, it's like, you know, I really love chocolate and I really love pepperoni. I don't want to eat them together.
Well, that's more of a plot point.
It is, but it is also casting, because it's not just liking the people that are there, it's like the people in the combination that are there.
Yeah, that's true, but all these people were already there. The only person that's new is the Sentry character.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. But anyway, on to plot. The make or break, generally, for everything. So did you have any feeling of surprise about how the general plot went from the beginning to the end?
No, the trailers unfortunately murdered all that stuff.
Yeah.
Just like they murdered Taskmaster. you know, you could see that from the trailers, because all the presentation in your face is Taskmaster and everybody else. But then all the trailer footage from any of them, you never see the character, right? You're like, okay, she gone.
They snuck her into a couple of posters, but that was about
it. Which is a travesty.
Yeah.
I mean, we both like that character, the actual character, not this one. So that was a waste of a property, honestly. That's not a plot point per se.
No.
It was interesting that they straight blasted her in the head and dead.
Right.
And because you don't often see killing of characters, major or not, throughout the movies, except when the main villain dies at the end of all of them. But that one was just, you know, like not a throwaway. That's not it. Was it a shock factor? I don't even know that. I just felt like maybe they didn't know what to do with that character once they got it.
And maybe they realized they made a mistake. I rethought how they did that character over and over and over again. And some people say it's like, well, it's just because they made it a girl. It's like, no, it could have been female, because Taskmaster, male or female, doesn't really matter so long as you keep the character concept intact. And I was just thinking back, it's like, well, okay, she was going to be a member of that kind of Red Room thing. They did that as a prequel. It's like, man, if they would have just snuck her in to a couple of the other films, like you would see her in Captain America, Winter Soldier or something, and he's training people at training Crossbow for, or not Crossbow, Crossbones at the S.H.I.E.L.D. facility. He's also part of the Hydra, kind of, but he sees how things, or she sees how things is going down. She goes, no, I'm out of here. Age of Ultron, she's training some of the Hydra people to do things, and it's like, oh, the Avengers are coming. Yeah, I'm leaving. It's just, they could have done that multiple times, because that's what the Taskmaster is. He's an opportunist, and he knows when to get, because he's seen this stuff go down a few times. She could have been the exact same way, and they could have still had her in the Black Widow film, and it would have been good. And they just did nothing.
They, you know, maybe with the reset, maybe we'll get the character back, and they'll do that, where it's just a reoccurring character, 5 minutes of screen time in like every third movie.
Right.
And the character is always a problem, and there's never a resolution for it.
Right. That would be so much fun. That's comics in a freaking nutshell.
So that's not part necessarily of the overall plot of this movie.
No.
But
just a sore point.
It's a sore point. And I don't know if they did the quick kill like that as just a shock value thing. They mean business in this movie. They're okay with killing off people in this movie.
Hard to tell.
I don't know. I don't. Whatever. Cool.
If I was the actress, I probably would have asked to have my character killed off.
Yeah. And then their reactions were just like, oh. And that was it.
Yeah. And that kind of plays into the other thing. So, you know, a lot of times the whole point of a group project with a bunch of different characters that you're focusing on is they all have these major differences of personality to bounce off of each other and give you some flavor and some different things. But in this one, we get Yelena Belova, who's the dark brooding type, is teamed with Sebastian Stan, who's the dark brooding type, with Wyatt Russell, who's the dark brooding type.
all characters that have gone down the wrong path, but not, I mean, not, yes, no. I don't know, based on all of the other movies and TV shows that have come out, because to an extent, maybe it's contract negotiation stuff, right? So who did they have left on the payroll?
Right.
Who has contract stuff? Well, we know you're going to be in these other two Avengers movies, but you owe us one more film. Let's do this one, you know?
Right.
And that very well could be part of the storyline too. And you said you've had people compare this to the Suicide Squad. Yeah, that's the idea of the Suicide Squad is different.
Yeah, but all the characters were vastly different characters. You still had a dark brooding one, but you had the manic one. You had the overly optimistic one. You had the schizo one. You know, they all had their thing, and it was really developed well. And it's just, generally, Yelena's supposed to be the cute one. Well, kind of cute. In the sense that it's hard not to like her. Like, when she was in Hawkeye, that was great. That was some of the best writing for that character that I'd seen. It was so good and so likable. And, yeah, she's at a crossroads, but is that going to completely change how she interacts with everything? Should it change it? I don't know if it should.
And there really isn't a leader, right? No. So who is leading this group?
Right.
So I think you got a lack of that, but you also got who did you really get set out through some of the other, like the end sequences of shows, when the Valentina character was talking to a few of the people. Like, so she had an end sequence where she spoke to John Walker.
Right.
She had a sequence where she spoke to Yelena. But that was really it. Right. I don't know
pretty much
if there was anybody else. And you're right. I'm just trying to think. I like, from a storytelling standpoint, how they brought everybody to the point, how they brought them together. She was the thing that orchestrated the people that didn't have a place, and they all happened to have similar, you know, brooding attitudes.
Right.
And I think that was the type of team that she was okay with having, not the bright ones. So when I say bright, not intelligent, but like,
luminescent,
lively, right? Yeah. So that was the team that she was developing, because this was a team of underhanded people, you know, under the radar agents. This wasn't a team of people that were going to be the face of anything. These were the people that eliminated the faces of people, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's part of it too, that you wanted the team of the people that aren't good, quote, good guys. And unfortunately, a lot of those not good guys tend to lean towards that brooding blah, blah, blah. I'm having a bad day, or I'm angry, or I did something bad.
I mean, at least we got some enthusiasm from the Red Guardian character. That was nice. But the thing that would have really made it work for me is like John Walker. The thing that makes his character really interesting is he was originally in the comics meant to be, just like in the show, a replacement for Captain America. So he suffers from imposter syndrome. He's constantly self-doubting. He's mentally unstable, as we got to see when he killed the dude with the shield. But when push comes to shove, he can pull it together, and people can't help but fall in line behind him. He does have that leadership skill, and they never let that shine through. He should be the natural leader for the team. You know, they're all going to question him, but he's still the leader.
You're right, and I feel like he brings that up. I've been to this. I've done this. I should make the decisions. Well, you never really got that attitude overall that he was the leader of this.
No.
And that's what it is. They don't have a leader. So maybe that's where the Anthony Mackie character comes in.
That could be fun.
As Captain America, as the leader, and whatever team he... See, the team that he would bring together would be the ones with the brighter spirits, right? So then those two teams combine to get that good mix of the people. But I mean, I don't know how that's going to look or how they're going to end up doing that. But
hopefully it'll be good. I mean, the original comic thing, the original Thunderbolts were put together by Zemo. Zemo created, got a bunch of his old Masters of Evil people together to rescue another member of the team. And then they were going to go after the Avengers. But then the whole Onslaught storyline happened. And all the Avengers died, as did the Fantastic Four and a bunch of other people. So instead, he goes, "Well, we'll just pose as heroes for a while. We'll be the replacement team, and then we'll make our move later," sort of a thing. The fun part is several of the individuals liked being the good guys. They didn't want to go back to being villains. It was such a fun storyline. But oh well, we got this instead.
Yeah, but that's what they've done a lot. They take a name for a thing, an idea for a thing, and make it their own for cinema purposes.
I did really like their choice of the soccer team, Thunderbolts. That was fun.
That was a very good. I mean, you almost saw the foreshadowing, of course, by him grabbing the photos, and then they talk, because why are you talking about grabbing the photo off the dirty kitchen? And then it's like you can almost see, okay, I mean, this is, and then they start talking about the name of it. I was like, funny, okay, I get it. That's where we're seeing more of this here. Yeah. Cheesy but funny.
Kind of the last thing that I want to bring up in terms of Sentry, I felt that it was one of the more realistic portrayals of kind of a bipolar personality. I thought that they did a really good job in how they did it and what happens when that person gets just essentially unlimited power. And this is a great idea. You get to have your cake and eat it too. You get to see that power briefly, and they've got a built-in reason to say, well, we're just not going to have him be here all the time because he can't be. It's like, oh, okay. That's because he would wipe the floor with anybody that's left over right now. You could take every single hero that's left, throw them all against him at the same time, and it's just not even close.
Yeah, it's like the... To me, it's like the Superman character. How do you have a Superman character with a Batman and a Green Arrow? how do you have there be an equal thing? And in the cartoons, it's like, oh, he's off world. right? He's solving problems in another galaxy. Perfect. Great. So that, you're right, that makes sense. And he even, we talked to us, he doesn't know what his power set actually is.
No, not yet.
And he acknowledges as he's kind of going through it at the end there, where it's like, if I'm a god, why should anybody tell me what to do?
Right.
And so he's kind of getting the idea. He's kind of getting it before it snaps, and then the actual god piece takes over. And you're right. I like how they are going to show him basically just being Bob.
Yeah.
And something's going to happen.
He'll have to adopt it. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, it's going to be so good. But anyway, out of a total score of 20, what would you give the plot and writing of this film?
Honestly, other than some cheesy little things like the motorcade sequence where they have the automated Hummers that with shooting guns, but actually there's people
and sound waves and
some cheesy stuff in there. I did 15 on this one out of 20.
I'd say so too. 15 seems pretty fair. Any bonus points here or there?
No bonus for me.
Yeah, me neither. I'm pretty happy with my score. This adds up to a very nice 84 from Richard. That puts it in the solid B category. I gave it a 78, C+. You know, all in all, really nice viewing experience. And I think that works for me, because looking at the C+, it's like, I probably won't watch the film again. Maybe one more time just to see anything I missed, but that's about it.
Yeah, this will be something that most likely I'm going to watch again. Every once in a while, you get the itch to kind of just go through all the MCU movies, or maybe start from a spot and just go forward.
Right.
And I feel like you hit a wall when you get to some of the middling things. I like the Eternals. A lot of people don't.
That's okay.
Shang-Chi is fine.
I enjoyed that one.
And Widow was not great, but I feel like we've hit this wave the last few years where a lot of the movies and TV shows even were just kind of
not as good.
Not as good. And I hope this is, we're turning, right?
From everything I've heard, they are changing their focus.
Yep. And I like what I'm actually getting excited for a Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't been excited for a comic book movie. And I don't even like the Fantastic Four characters. I don't like the first family. I don't like the Mole Man character is funny, cool, great. Galactus is fine. I like Galactus as a character, but you've never really seen that character as the character that it's meant to be. And I think we'll get some of that finally in this movie. So I like, I'm hyped for that. We got a little, you know, we got a post credits.
Yes, we did.
The tease that they're on their way. So, you know, let's keep the momentum rolling, because after July, then it's kind of dead for a year. you pretty excited about Ironheart?
No, not really.
So Ryan Coogler is the one that's producing it,
which
probably
is good.
Directed an episode,
so maybe he'll fix what I disliked about the comic character. We'll see.
Yeah,
but so this is our next last episode this season. We will be coming back next week with an interview with the amazing James Dumont. That'll finish up our 7th season. Then we're going to take a little sabbatical and come back with some new awesome stuff. But tell us what you think. As always, we're available on social media. Did we get the score right? Were we nowhere near correct? Did we forget something important? We always love to hear from you. Until next time, stay safe, watch films, be kind to each other, and watch out for your fellow people. Watch out for your neighbors. They're like family.